session, we have Charles Bailey, who perhaps single-handedly, although that's hard to say for someone who's from the Ford Foundation, has moved the United States and Vietnam forward in Agent Orange work, collaborative work, and has encouraged other non-governmental organizations as well as the U.S. government to move forward towards where we should be, hopefully before too long. Charles, thank you for coming.
So thank you very much. I lived in Hanoi for 10 years, from 1997 to 2007, where my daytime job was making grants for the Ford Foundation. During that period of time, we made about $100 million in grants, primarily to Vietnamese universities, research agencies, and government. But early on in my time there, I became aware that there was this lingering ghost, this legacy, this thing that no one wanted to talk about, of Agent Orange, so much so in my first 7 years, I was only able to find two organizations willing to accept grants. This is very unusual for a grant maker. Usually it's the other way around. In any event, this afternoon I'm going to talk briefly about how we came to have this legacy and what it is today and some of the progress that is being made. And I'm just going to go through it quickly so that we can leave more time for Q&A. So I guess, what do I do? Okay. It's usually lurking down there. Right. Well, Agent Orange was brought to Vietnam by the U.S. military during the war to destroy food crops and places of concealment. Daily spraying over the course of a decade destroyed forests over an area about the size of Massachusetts. And there are still large areas in the mountains where no useful trees or crops will grow. sorry, I skipped a page here. This shows some of the data and is similar to the slide that Professor Schechter showed. This next slide I took 2 years ago in the area where Agent Orange drums were stored in the airport serving the city of Da Nang in central Vietnam. During the 1960s, over 100,000 barrels of Agent Orange and similar herbicides passed through this site en route to the spray plane loading area, which you can see in the distance there. The main passenger terminal you can see right here, so it's not very far from where you get off the plane even today. Agent Orange carried with it dioxin, a persistent and highly poisonous chemical. And while the dioxin had its origins in this seemingly long ago war, it's still a problem today. And that is the reason I wish to thank you again for organizing this discussion. Exposure to dioxin is strongly associated with chronic ill health, and even more notably with increased numbers of children born with severe and often multiple disabilities. The majority of those affected, estimated by the government of Vietnam to be some 3 million people, appear to be descendants of those originally exposed in the 1960s. One should never underestimate the destructive power of physical and mental disability, both for the individual and for his or her family. This is especially true for women and children who are the most vulnerable. Dioxin-associated disability places a heavy and often lifelong financial, physical, social, and spiritual burden on families who are struggling to cope. And furthermore, the fear of disability often prevents the formation of new families. Stigma and discrimination can prevent a person considered an Agent Orange victim from finding a marriage partner. For expectant mothers, the fear of giving birth to a child with disabilities haunts them. According to a recent study by Tine Gammeltoft, a Danish medical anthropologist, widespread fear of unwanted birth outcomes leads many pregnant women in the Red River Delta, where there was never any spraying, to seek reassurance by having as many as 20 to 30 ultrasounds during the course of their pregnancy. Agent Orange is a growing domestic issue in Vietnam. And the government of Vietnam has increased the allocation of its funds to environmental cleanup and for direct assistance to those who've been exposed. They're currently paying about $50 million a year in monthly income supplements to many of these people. The major piece of any solutions, pieces of any solution, need a further and deeper commitment from the U.S. government with funds and technical assistance. This would demonstrate to the Vietnamese public that the U.S. is at last taking a measure of responsibility. And we've seen some promising beginnings. In 2004, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency began technical cooperation with Vietnamese counterparts, and EPA and the State Department spent about $2 million on technical assistance of various kinds, but solely focusing on the identification of docks and contaminated point sources, the well-known hotspots. In November 2006, the U.S. government took the next step. While on an official visit to Vietnam, President Bush committed the U.S. to help Vietnam. And I'm sorry, it should be November 2006, not 2007. The Congress took the process a step forward in May of 2007 by appropriating an initial $3 million for both cleanup and for health programs in surrounding communities. This is the congressional mandate. Another $3 million was appropriated in March 2009. But so far, I would say the U.S. government has been insufficiently ambitious, to put it mildly. The Ford Foundation grants made our first grants in this area in 2000, and our role has been that as a neutral go-between, bringing people together, getting them to talk together, funding confidence-building joint activity. In addition to being a grant maker, in early 2007, we joined with leading Vietnamese and Americans to form the U.S.-Vietnam Dialogue Group on Agent Orange Dioxin. This is a binational and nonpartisan committee of prominent private citizens, scientists, and policymakers who are working to draw attention to this issue and to mobilize resources. The dialogue group set the overall goal of resolving the Agent Orange dioxin legacy within the larger frame of improved U.S.-Vietnam relations. The group has adopted a forward-looking and humanitarian approach to a solution, and they have identified these five priority tasks. Since the precise causal link between exposure to dioxin and disability is still disputed, the dialogue group has taken an inclusive approach, aiming to assist all who are disabled. So far, these efforts have helped to mobilize $29.3 million from institutional donors, which are being used for a variety of, for three purposes: cleanup, services for people with disabilities, and advocacy. This is the shares in the cleanup. So far, about $13 million. And I'm happy to expand more in the Q&A on this if you wish. Our share in this of the total 29 and a bit is $11.3 million in grants. Other U.S. foundations, foreign governments, and the United Nations have contributed nearly the same amount. The U.S. government has so far disbursed or obligated $6.1 million. That is the sum of the $2.2 million and the $4.1 million I mentioned a moment ago. It's natural that people want to know, what's the total result? What are you asking for? And cleanup, according to a recent UN survey, to clean the three principal hotspots at Da Nang, Phu Cát, and Biên Hòa, will cost about $60 million. I estimate another $25 million will be needed to test and clean up another 25 suspected hotspots. As for the affected people, it's impossible to put a dollar amount on human suffering. We can put some estimates on costs for improved health care and other social services for people with disabilities. And again, we can come back to this in the Q&A if you wish. I'm now going to use the remainder of my time to outline some achievements and what has been done with this $29.3 million. The cleanup, the $13 million, is primarily for the airport in the city of Da Nang. Let's go to this. And this is the airport. You can see Da Nang Bay to the north, and the East Sea is just off the right. The Han River and downtown Da Nang are here, and the ocean is this way. Three studies that we funded in 2003, 2006, and 2009 collected a total of 410 samples, 198 of these soil and sediments, 41 fish and vegetation, and 171 human blood and breast milk. The first two studies confirmed, that is the 2003-2006, confirmed the northern areas of the Da Nang Airport to be a significant dioxin hotspot, as shown here. Following the 2006 study, interim mitigation measures, I always find that a mouthful. What you really mean is paving it over and locking it down. Anyway, these were we implemented in 2007. This included halting all fishing and agricultural activities in Sen Lake, which is right here, the very polluted direct runoff from the hotspot. Capping of soils at the former mixing and loading areas here and here. A runoff filtration and containment structure for contaminated sediment. And the fourth element, very important, in this system was construction of a permanent fence between the highly contaminated Sen Lake and these neighborhoods right here, which you can see here. This is very contaminated lake, and these are middle-class housing recently constructed. The 2009 environmental and human population studies, that is the third round of these, has now provided a more complete picture of dioxin-contaminated areas, exposure pathways, and affected populations. And here are a few highlights from the study. First, significant quantities of TCDD, the dioxin contaminant in Agent Orange, were detected in soil samples analyzed from the north end of the Da Nang Airport in December 2006 and again in January 2009. TCDD concentrations range from 858 to 361,000 picograms per gram dry weight in samples from the former mixing and loading and storage areas that I showed on the previous slide. These exceed all international standards and guidelines. Secondly, dioxin congener profiles confirmed that the main source of dioxin contamination at the north end was indeed from Agent Orange and other dioxin-containing herbicides. TCDD contributed over 90% of TEQ in soil and sediment samples. Third, tilapia, the most common fish harvested from these ponds at the Da Nang Airport, exhibited TCDD concentrations ranging from 3.7 to 7,920 picograms per gram wet weight in fat tissues. The median TCDD value was 57.1. Health Canada, which is the standard that is used here, consumption guidelines for edible fish tissue is 20 picograms per gram wet weight. This next slide shows some of the results of the 2009 blood dioxin furan levels from communities surrounding the airport confirmed elevated concentrations of people living north, east, and west of this hotspot. This slide shows dioxin levels for people working or making a living in the north end of the airport, the Sen Lake workers, these graphs here, and the West Airbake workers. This is Sen Lake right here, and this is the West Airbase workers. The Sen Lake workers, who are earning their living primarily from fishing, consuming, and selling fish, have the highest median concentrations. The maximum TCD concentrations of 1,150 picograms per gram lipid basis in 2006 was recorded in a 42-year-old male who regularly harvested fish and plants from Sen Lake. In 2009, TCDD in this same individual's blood was measured at 1,340 picograms per gram lipid basis. So it's more to come on this. The next slide summarizes results from the blood samples of people in five other neighborhoods in Da Nang, four of them within 1 kilometer of the airport. Some but not all individuals sampled in these four wards exhibited TCD concentrations greater than 10 picograms per gram. The Vietnam Public Health Association in 2006 surveyed the food handling eating habits of people living near the Bien Hoa Airport, a second highly contaminated dioxin hotspot in southern Vietnam near Ho Chi Minh City. From these data, they prepared targeted messages and extension materials to increase people's attention to food safety. The Public Health Association is currently carrying out a similar project for Da Nang City and also resurveying the people in Bien Hoa to see whether the measures had an impact. So here is a typical, they have flyers, things to put on the kitchen wall. Quite a lot of the Public Health Association has a network of local volunteers in neighborhoods that they work with. The final stage of environmental remediation, of course, is the actual physical destruction of the dioxin. Dr. Dong Thi Cam Ha of Vietnam's Institute of Biotechnology has demonstrated in her laboratory microbes that digest dioxin. The Vietnam Academy of Science and the Ministry of Defense and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency are now conducting a joint study shown here, which we are funding, to measure whether this biotechnology can indeed neutralize dioxin in much larger volumes of soil on site on the airport. Results so far, we're now at day 97, are very promising for a cleanup technology that is effective, safe, and low cost. The second pie chart, which shows the sources of funding for healthcare and other services to people with disabilities, again through the end of September. You'll see that the composition here is of donors is rather different than for the cleanup. As I mentioned earlier, the U.S. government has focused its efforts primarily on the cleanup. We hope to change that. And in Phucat, at a community rehab center, we have the beginnings of services, the needs of people with disabilities, change as they grow and develop into young adults. Most of the people I'm talking about are children and young adults. And these needs vary from person to person and family to family. As a consequence, programs of assistance need to be flexible, responding to each family's situation, comprehensive, offering a range of high-quality services, and inclusive, reaching everyone in need. So the challenge of the Agent Orange legacy of the war is to focus resources, funds, and expertise to ensure healthy families, and more particularly to ensure that people with disabilities in Vietnam can live with self-confidence, self-respect, and to the extent possible, maximize their capabilities. This is the cleanup is the easy part. We now know how to do that. The human needs are much more difficult, and that's where we always have had and indeed should turn our full attention. Here is a young lady in Da Nang who agrees. And finally, we hope that more people in our country will become aware of the need to address this situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we've officially run over time, but let's go to questions. Yes, please.
Is there any idea, like, how many people are affected with, disability or disease because of the
This is a kind of a moving target because people are born, people die. Sometimes these conditions don't manifest themselves until a little bit later in life. There are also differences in the capabilities from province to province to carry out the medical evaluation. So it's always going to be a rough number or an estimate. The Red Cross and the government of Vietnam have now picked the round number of 3 million. This may include people from whose disability stems from other causes. I don't regard that as important. I think that it's important to deliver programs for everyone who has a need, who's disabled. I would like to start in areas where people feel that there is an especially high concentration or incidence of disability.
I don't think anyone knows at this time, because official Vietnamese government surveys over the last 10 years have gone from 30,000 to several million. And there can be so many causes of disability, including if you have defoliation, you're going to have poor nutrition. In this country, everyone gets folic acid if they're pregnant. That's not the case in Vietnam. There's, in the United States, maybe 2 to 3% of babies are born with gross malformations. And usually we have no idea what the cause is, except for very rarely. And the other problem in Vietnam is if you want to establish that it's Agent Orange related, you would have to show an elevated level of dioxin in the mother or father at an absolute minimum. And that's pretty pricey. And I would add that sometimes when we've done that, when we've done with Vietnamese physicians and surgeons, when we thought the cause of a malformation was Agent Orange, in some cases it's come back with extremely low levels in the mother or father. So, I mean, there are lots of causes for malformations. No matter what, since war caused major damage to Vietnam, these kids need help, whatever the cause.
I have a question about the earlier presentation. Do you have any hypotheses for the extremely dramatic difference in dioxin concentrations between ducks and chickens?
Oh, that was, I don't think anyone, unless the Ford Foundation recently sampled, and I don't think they have, because we focused initially on finding positive findings. I mean, when I first started, was there anyone or any animals that had elevated levels? And when we got the answer yes, and it was not all that hard to find, we kept sticking to people who were more likely to be exposed and the where Agent Orange was stored and so on. A representative sampling of the country has not been done for people, for food. It's going to be very expensive. It's, on average, something like $900 per dioxin analysis at the lab, unless you can get discounted volume rates.
But when you measured, the dioxin levels in ducks were 9,000 picograms per...
Well, they go around, and remember, we reported in whole weight, and our colleagues at Hatfield reported in lipid, and it's much higher in lipid because these are fat soluble, even though the amount is the same, but the number reads higher. Ducks go around gobbling up things in and around lakes and down at the bottom of lakes. As my Vietnamese colleagues point out. You got a question?
Oh, why did the Czech Republic have such a large chunk of the money?
Well, thanks for noting that detail. After the end of the Soviet Union, as you'll recall, there were a lot of brownfields and other needs to clean up industrial wastes in Europe. And in consequence, then Czechoslovakia developed a specialization and the skills, the technical skills, what eventually emerged to be, I think now, Europe's largest company called DeConta. That does brownfields and cleanup and under a variety of technologies. And Czechoslovakia during the Soviet Union was part of the Eastern Bloc and an aid donor to North Vietnam. 2 decades later, times change, they come back as the Czech Republic and they look around and see what they could do as a way of making up, getting connected. And so they found a hospital they'd built in the Red River Delta in the 1960s, and they modernized it. That done, they then looked to where they thought their comparative strength was, and they thought, aha, dioxin, with which they had had no contact historically, and they therefore connected DeConta with the Vietnamese, and who welcomed that technical cooperation.
Who is major attributable of Ford Foundation? Is it coming from individual donor or
for neither. We don't accept any outside contributions from any source. 75 years ago, the Ford Foundation was set up by Henry Ford I, but it became in 1948 when he died. His will stipulated that it will be fully independent of the Ford family, the Ford Motor Company. I think the last share of Ford Motor Company stock was finally sold in 1971. So it's invested globally, and it's the dividends, interest income that we give away.
There's one point.
That's why the U.S. government, although we're unhappy, we're not able to stop what we were able to do.
There's one point that was raised on how do you clean up. The United States, for the most part, has given up on bacterial degradation, microbial degradation, feeling that in real-life situations, it just doesn't do the job. I mean, otherwise, General Electric tried very hard to clean up the Hudson River of PCBs, thinking of any possible method, including microbial degradation, and it just didn't work. So EPA finally told them, you're going to have to dredge and remove it elsewhere. So I know the results look very good in the lab. They do in Vietnam, and they do in the United States. It's in the real world where microbial degradation doesn't seem to work very well.
What I was describing were real world results.
Mm-hmm. But I'd like to see them published. Mm-hmm.
You will.
Can you mention a bit about the dioxin lab? I know Marty has had some questions about how this new lab that's Gates and Atlantic funded would be different from the others.
Much higher resolution. It will be able to detect down to the same level as labs, like Axis labs. And that's the main difference. And the second difference is that it has actually been set up with a business plan to do a variety of organic pollutants. So the principals in this would prefer to call it an organic pollutant lab rather than a dioxin lab, but dioxin is easier to pronounce. But the idea is that it would be both a scientific instrument, not just a regulatory routine lab, and that there would be cross-subsidization between the relatively low-cost testing of a variety of industrial pollutants needed for their EPA and the very high cost of doing these samples. But it will still be lower cost, I suspect, when all the dust is sampled and settled, than sending them to Germany or to the U.S. or Japan or Canada.
I have a question to follow up, Susan's. Is this the fourth or the third Vietnam so-called dioxin laboratory?
I don't know. It's the first that is as I described it.
Because there was at least one lab in Hanoi doing.
Yeah, it's at the Russia-Vietnam Tropical Center, and they cannot do the level of testing that I described.
And one in Ho Chi Minh City, and they had competing scientists at the Paris meeting a few years ago, and independent evaluators from Germany who do dioxin analysis thought both were promising. Mm-hmm. And then which is the lab that has the old CDC gas chromatograph mass spectrometer?
That's in the Institute of Chemistry as part of, in Hanoi.
Mm-hmm. And that's not doing high resolution?
Well, they do Calix. That's what they do.
Calyx is a biological.
Right. And then they do something else, but it is the equipment was, as I understand it, was obsolete when it was 11 years old when the CDC finally decided to hand it over. And there have been lots of technical issues of getting it to work. And I have actually heard nothing about it in the last 18 months, so it's not producing any results that I'm aware of.
And how will the new lab be funded, because it takes a fair amount of money to buy the standards and everything else?
It's a joint project of the government of Vietnam, Gates, and Atlantic Philanthropies, who are all funding it.
One more question.
Mm-hmm.
If there's so much evidence or awareness on the effects of biological warfare with Agent Orange, how is it possible that UN nation members of the Geneva Convention are still allowed to use biological warfare such as white phosphorus?
So I missed your subject. Why is it possible that
if there's so much evidence on Agent Orange, for example, how are nation members of the Geneva Convention still able to still permitted to use or biological warfare, like white phosphorus, for example?
I'm not competent to answer that question. I don't know anything about white phosphorus.
The little I know of it is, it's not, the white phosphorus isn't intended to be used as a chemical weapon. It's the same reason that I'll talk about in the next panel about why the lawsuit was dismissed. They're used for, it gets really technical, and that they're used not as a chemical weapon against an enemy. So therefore, it's not part of the Geneva Convention's ban on chemical weapons. The white phosphorus is used to illuminate where the troops are down below or whatever reasons that they are military things. So it gets really
come to the
technical.
Next session.
Yeah,
yeah, my non-technical answer is they're all nasty stuff, which no government should be doing.
I think everyone would agree with that. Thank you very much.